producing over 500 hours per week of talk radio. GCN Live is a world leader in talk radio. GCNLive.com.
Welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, saudi karup, guten tag, jao wivi va kat bang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace, now, go vegan, peace, how, go vegan. From the left coast of the unlabeled, genetically mutated, McNugget pharmaceutical, vivisection prison, killitary industrial, core poor nation, in the cheese-covered, post-constitutional, bankster bankrupt, corruptocracy, mockracy, criminocracy of the United States of Listeria, foodborne in the NSA, NRA, USA, home of Uncle Sam Manila, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Is it possible that this is the 15th anniversary of this radio program? Well, why? It seems like it was just, 1,500 years ago that we made our debut. I mean, kind of actually seems like both. A long time that we've been on the air. And it also seems like the blink of an eye. Kind of a blur. Holy cow. 15 years. That means we have exceeded our expectations by 14 years and 50 weeks. I don't know. This may be the first vegan radio program ever broadcast in the universe. It's certainly the first ever in commercial or mainstream meaty. How did I get myself into this? I keep asking myself on a weekly basis, on a daily basis. So I really need someone to blame, or thank. I don't know. I can't really tell the difference. And I think that person would be Suzanne Lachan, a radio producer at KRLA in Los Angeles. Back in 2000, the year 2000, I was organizing a vegan festival in Los Angeles called World Fest. And I was going around promoting it on various radio stations in Los Angeles, and including KRLA. Where Suzanne said to me, "Hey, you have a," I think she said, hey you, probably. "Hey, you have a background in broadcasting and animal rights. You should be doing a weekly radio show. And we just happen to have time available on the weekends, and you have to pay for it, though, but why don't you go out and try to find some advertising to cover it?" So I did, and by the end of January in 2001, I had just enough money to get me in trouble. Also, I had to figure out just what does a vegan radio show sound like? How do I avoid being so depressing and morbid? I don't want to send the audience, off to... I wanted to prevent people in the audience from slitting their wrists. I'm encouraging life here, huh? But I must say, there's no business like vegan show business. Then again... Why worry, I thought. I'll do my vegan radio show once or twice. The owners and managers of the radio station would hear it, and they'd say, "Get that guy off the air. He's offending all of our regular advertisers. You know, and I thought, well, they probably would say, hey, change the building security code so he can't get in. Well, thankfully, for 15 years now, no radio station owner or manager and no radio network owner or manager has ever listened to this program. So that must be the reason for the longevity of this show. Or, yeah, I get maybe money is their language too, you know. And I was actually paying for airtime. This was like a vegan infomercial. So I was a client. Oh, they had to treat me nice because I was actually giving them money. After KRLA in Los Angeles, the CBS affiliate in San Francisco soon started carrying the show. What was it? KYCY. And, you know, various radio station incarnations in the Bay Area, the Quake and Green 960, and been on various CBS and Clear Channel radio stations around the country, numerous networks, including Air America, the liberal radio network, and, you know, I mean, yeah, Air America, even though I know it was getting complaints, like, coming in, you know, who does that guy think he is telling us what to eat, huh? So, you know, I'm trying to point out that it's not what you're eating, it's whom you're eating, progressive, liberal people of the universe. I'm sure I was the most progressive program on Air America, I guess the most liberal, if we want to consider it that. I was also probably the only paying customer on Air America. You know, it went out of business, lack of revenues. Only I, I was keeping it afloat. I was probably paying, you know, Tom Hartman's salary or whatever. All the while, couch surfing over these 15 years, it's been a strange existence, having to figure out, well, do I want to pay rent or do I want to pay for airtime? And apparently I chose paying for airtime, so it's been interesting couch surfing over the last 15 years, financing this activist habit of mine. So, we've been on Air America, the liberal radio network, and then I've been on the most right-wing of, really right-wing conservative stations. Hard to believe, right? So, KPLS in Orange County sought this radio show. They contacted me, very conservative radio station. I asked them again, have you ever heard this show? Are you sure you want me? And, you know, they wanted my infomercial better than an hour of a mortgage broker or a vitamin pill. They wanted the content of this show. And so, okay. And I used to have to go to the radio stations when I did the program. So I had to show up there. I had to show up at KPLS in, Anaheim or Orange, I guess it was. And after my show, the guy who would follow me, conservative host, Kevin something or other, would always come to work, and I'd hear the door close, and I'd hear him say, is the communist still in the building? Is the communist still here? That's how he regarded my vegan cause. But oddly enough, he as a conservative and I found common ground with constitutional rights, freedom of speech. He was somewhat anti-George Bush, so we actually got to talking a little bit. We got to talking about the two strokes that he's had in his life. He said to me he thought the most un-American thing he ever heard in his life was when I came on the air and said not to eat a hamburger or a hot dog on the 4th of July. So I, of course, had further discussions with him at that radio station, and how American that he himself had a couple of strokes. So we got into discussions about that. I wound up bringing vegan food into the radio station, and Kevin was trying it and liking it a lot. He said, I like the food. That doesn't mean I agree with your philosophy, but I like the food. So I told him, just keep eating the food. Don't worry about the philosophy. Like, your philosophy, but talk about freedom of speech, okay? And gosh, over the years, this program has always been one of the highest rated programs on the radio stations who played it. Oddly enough, couldn't have been all vegans listening. Must be that people are interested in eating. Just in eating, I guess, right? People are interested in eating. People are interested in animals and interested in strange ideas that seem to make a lot of sense. Oh, by the way, coming up on today's program, Clifton Roberts will be our guest. He is the candidate for the Humane Party, presidential candidate. Let's see, so I think in the polls he's leading Jeb exclamation point by a few points there. So I guess there's hope, right? We'll talk to him coming up on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, which is now syndicated in our 15th year. We are with the Genesis Communications Network, live Sundays 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific time. And GCNlive.com is the website for the Genesis Communications Network. This is the network that syndicates Alex Jones and apparently wanted this program on it, you know, to make Alex look, you know, like he makes a lot of sense, which quite often he does. Quite often otherwise. No, really, really interesting programming here on the Genesis Communications Network. And I was told that Go Vegan Radio is the first food show on this network. That's when we came on the air. It must be a couple of years now on GCN, where we are. I never knew we were a food show, so that was news to me. But apparently... that's a big part of what we do. So, anyway, I'm not sure if, well, I wanted to play this song, but it looks like our studio engineer has had car problems, so I don't think we'll be able to get to this song that I wanted to play to celebrate the 15th anniversary of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. You can support this program with a tax-deductible donation, believe it or not. I know, just the fact we're on 15 years, believe it or not, that's amazing. So, and if you have not donated to our 501c3, you can do so. Hey, give us a dollar for every year we've been on the air. Send us $15, okay? Or how about $100 for every year we've been on the air? $1,000 for every... We're organizing the World Vegan Summit and Expo. It costs a lot of money. Anyway, we will continue. It's Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and you can support us by finding the donate button at goveganradio.com. Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at goveganradio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and there are two Bob Linden pages, so you can be my friend and then be my friend again. We can never have enough friends, and we'd like as many friends as possible to join us at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, which will be happening July 29th, 30th, and 31st on the campus of the University of California, Berkeley, where we are getting together, and the plan is to strategize so that we can help everybody go vegan as quickly as possible. It is necessary, you know, just to save the world, basically, from climate change. You know, 2015 was the hottest year on record by a lot, so That's the result of climate change. Now, we are told that animal agriculture is the number one cause of climate change, responsible for at least 51% of all greenhouse gas emissions. So, 2015 is the hottest year because people are eating meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. It's time to stop if we want to save the world. So, do join us at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, worldvegansummit.com. You can register now. Also, and we're trying to catch up. You know, we're a grassroots nonprofit, so we're trying to catch up and get back in touch with everybody who's contacting us. We're staying busy. We do need volunteers right now, and everything from marketing, social networking and marketing and graphic design. And you can email Michelle Tung if you can help with volunteering right now. And that email address is event@worldvegansummit.com. And again, as I mentioned, you can donate. It's a tax-deductible donation. Click donate at goveganradio.com. We are organizing the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And there's nothing more important than everybody going vegan as quickly as possible. That's why, you know, I'm doing this radio show for 15 years, but I don't feel like I'm wasting time at all. I can't think of anything I would rather be doing than, trying to serve the interests of animals, the billions of animals who, you know, are used, who are eaten for food and worn and used in experimentation and entertainment. That's got to stop. Somebody's got to say it's got to stop. We also have an interesting platform from the Humane Party and Clifton Roberts coming up, which seems sensible to me, too. This, oddly enough, I mean, people listen to this show because it's an oddity, but really, when it comes right down to it, we do make the most sense. That's a scary thought, doing this for 15 years. Yes, I'm dedicated to it. I said, you know, and as I said, it's, it's been a financial burden, but, you know, any animal on any farm, you know, in any laboratory, in any circus, and anywhere would trade places with me to have the challenges of, you know, do I pay rent or do I pay for airtime? And, well, you know, and people, you know, people have donated and supported the show. People have advertised and supported the show. Greatly appreciated. I've gotten clunker cars donated. You know, it's always a Ford Pinto. It's never, you know, a nice Honda or Toyota or something. It's like, here's our Ford Pinto we want to donate. And I used to have to go to the radio stations 15 years ago. I had to show up at the stations, you know, we had to have special phone lines. I mean, it's just interesting how, even over the 15 years, how the technology has changed. So I would go to the station, do the show live, have it over phone lines. Then I would be doing it in studios, and the studio engineers would have to time it down to the second, and then they'd give it to me on a Sony mini disc, and I'd have to overnight the show to radio stations. And it's just been a wonderful 15 years there's no business like vegan show business, I can assure you of that. And but I wouldn't trade it for anything. My commitment is really to the animals. I'm saying, you know, as long as I can keep this going, putting the cause of veganism out there, why not? Again, there's nothing I'd rather be doing. Well, I mean, I do like music programming. Reason I was able to start this radio show was that they trusted me back at KRLA because I had a history in broadcast management, a background in that. Little did they know. So, and I'm working on creating an internet music radio station, working on that. Anyway, we'll continue with Clifton Roberts, the candidate for the Humane Party for president, on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at GoVeganRadio.com, on Twitter at GoVeganRadio, Facebook, Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. I have a couple of extraneous Bob Linden pages just to make sure I do everything in triplicate. And also register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo coming to Berkeley the end of next July. Go to worldvegansummit.com. And today we are going to speak with a presidential candidate. Now, I'm normally not terribly impressed with politicians. Generally, I feel that they don't even, if they could only figure out how to feed themselves and their families, maybe, you know, I'd respect them more, but, you know, there isn't even that to consider. And this is a presidential candidate. People are just learning Bernie Sanders' name right now, so they're becoming familiar with him. So here, just in time before the Iowa caucus, let's meet Clifton Roberts, who is the presidential candidate for the Humane Party. Welcome, Clifton. How are you today?
I am wonderful. Thanks for having me on the show, Bob. I'm a huge fan.
Well, thank you so very much. I really appreciate having you here. So for a lot of people, this will be the first that they hear that there is a Humane Party and a presidential candidate from it. So let's introduce ourselves and see who the Humane Party is, what it is, and who you are, what it represents. So who are you? You want to be my president.
That's right. Well, first and foremost, I am a human being, and then I am a United States citizen. I'm a father, and I am a vegan, and I've been a vegan for over 18 years now. And like most of the people that are probably listening to your show, the wonderful people that are listening to your show, I've always felt this emptiness ever since I found out what happened to the food that I was eating. I found out at an early age, but I took, you know, matters into my own hands and eventually became a vegan, you know, over 30 years ago. And, you know, about a year and a half ago, I started to just look for causes online, but I thought to myself that suing and simply doing the things that I've seen some of the other wonderful vegans and animal rights activists and environmental activists were doing, I wanted to actually get involved into politics somehow, but I had never been a politician. And lo and behold, after doing some online searches, I came across the Humane Party, which has been around since 2008. And so started to have conversations. Turned out that they were looking for some executives to do these rotating shifts. And I volunteered, and I've been a volunteer for the Humane Party ever since. I came aboard as the chief executive officer. I'm not doing so now because I'm running for president, but in May 1st of 2015, I accepted the role of chief executive officer, quote unquote, and applied to some of the skills that I have working for, you know, one of the world's most, the largest semiconductor company in the world. And I'm a senior manager of ethics and legal compliance. So my job there is to ensure that all 110,000 employees do their job with integrity and following the letter and the spirit of the law. So I had this organizational experience.
You're involved with ethics and legal compliance. Doesn't that immediately disqualify you from being president?
You know, yeah, I was looking at some of the qualifications and based on my own history. Yeah, I thought so. But I said, well, you know, let's make a change. Let's at least try to do it, right?
So much corruption. I mean, like, if it were, I'm in charge of corruption, then it's like, okay, you're going to shoot up in the polls or something, you know?
So. Right. Yeah. And, you know, it's what I'm known for at the company I work for, which is Intel Corporation, is, you know, making that fun. Having activities that employees can kind of take in and say, wow, it's fun to learn about ethics and anti-corruption and insider trading and you know, human rights. Even we're committed to human rights. And so I wanted to take that experience that I have and work for a cause and a movement that was much bigger than me. And anyone who knows me knows that since I've been vegan, I associate what the treatment of our non-human animal friends, that transcends into so many other areas and aspects of the way that government transacts business and the way that government handles affairs. So it was important that I got involved. Of course, coming aboard as a CEO, I had no intention of becoming, running for office at that time. My promise to the board of directors for the Humane Party, which, by the way, is a party that is committed to not only human rights, but non-human animal rights as well. And my commitment was to find skilled candidates to run for Senate, House of Representatives, to run for the president and vice president, and even find people that would be willing to run locally as well for local offices. So, mayor and city council, what have you.
Mm-hmm. And is that what you're still doing? That you're doing that with the Humane Party, recruiting potential candidates?
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. As a matter of fact, as chief executive officer, I actually worked with a young lady in New York who ran for town council in the county of Schenectady. That was the first person that I worked with. And what I did was help mobilize a team of volunteers to go door to door. And of course, we are learning, Bob, in the process. We learned that the establishment is going to make it difficult for you, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be impossible. And, on a paperwork mistake, on a paperwork error, and to give you an idea what that paperwork error was, we should not have included the Humane Party of New York logo on the submission form to the county clerk's office. That's what got us disqualified. So we ended up doing a write-in, but they wouldn't place us on the ballot because we had collected all of the signatures necessary. We did. We really did. And when we submitted it, we got a letter back stating, you have this logo that associates with a party specifically for New York, which I didn't even understand anyway. I guess they had some policies and procedures in place that didn't allow for that. But,
That doesn't seem like a serious offense to me. It seems like there could have been some compromise, or remove the logo, right, or something.
Absolutely, yeah. that's what we thought. But the beautiful thing about this effort, in whether it's for town council, whether it's for the House of Representatives, or whether it is for running for president, is we are establishing process. We are establishing guidelines for future efforts, and we're setting precedent as well.
Okay, so let's talk a bit about what the platform of the Humane Party is then. I know a lot of people would be excited knowing that they can vote for a vegan in this election. And by the way, just was there a moment for you where you went vegan, or was there something that just hit you, or was it cumulative, or what had you go vegan long ago?
That's a great question. I love sharing the story. So my mother is Korean. I was born overseas on a military installation. My father is African-American and Native American. And so I was always exposed to very healthy food, tofu and all that. But there was times when, of course, they would feed me some meat. And at the age of 5, I remember asking my mother, where does this come from? And she told me, that's steak is basically a dead cow. And I remember, as vivid as a memory that I had yesterday, oh my gosh, it's a cow. So I used to chew the flavor out of it and throw it in the corner. I thought if I threw it behind a curio cabinet that my mom wouldn't find it, but that was only 5-year-old mind thinking. And so when I attended Cal Berkeley, I met some other people and I decided to try out vegetarianism because I knew that there was something wasn't right about what I was eating. And I would think about animals being killed. And then finally, at the age of 30, I had read a book by Mary Lou Henner, who used to be on Taxi. I don't know if you remember her.
Of course I do, yeah.
And
she has a very good memory, too. As I recall, that's one of her qualities, that she can remember where she was like every day for the past many years. I don't know, something about her.
She's incredible, and something made sense. It really clicked. And when she said that, the liquid, the the substance that comes out of cows is designed to turn a 40-pound calf into a 1,000-pound, you know, beast in less than 2 years. So can you imagine what happens when another mammal drinks that substance? And it made complete sense to me. And right.
The growth hormones can grow tumors in people pretty quickly, too. So
absolutely, absolutely. So yeah. After that, it was pretty easy. And not to mention, Bob, I was always a pretty sick boy. You know, you're always going to remember the few times that you almost faced death. And one time I was on a motorcycle attending college, and the other two times, you know, I was a young boy having to be rushed to the hospital in ambulance because I couldn't breathe because they had diagnosed me with, quote-unquote, asthma. And as soon as I went vegan, I'd never been sick since then. Mm-hmm. I don't even get colds. My just to let you know, Bob, my acronym for cold is condition obviously linked to dairy.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so many of our problems, you know, and it's funny because when I came on this this course myself, I thought I was making a quiet little personal decision, not that I would host a vegan radio show and try to organize vegan events. But, you know, you come to realize that veganism touches upon everything, like everything that's wrong with the world can be traced to consumption of meat, dairy, fish, and eggs. For, you know, I mean, you go to slavery in South America or poverty or deforestation. I mean, everything that's wrong with the world. And you have a platform with the Humane Party that seems to address that kind of thinking, which I'm looking at it, it looks like such a sensible platform that I don't see how you have any chance. I don't know, you know.
Right.
It's so reasonable. Oh, it looks like we have to take a break. So we'll get into the platform. We'll continue our discussion with Clifton Roberts. He is the presidential candidate for the Humane Party. And up next hour, animal rights commentary with Professor Gary Francione. When we continue with Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, a couple of extraneous Bob Linden pages there to keep you busy if you don't want to keep on coloring. And what else? Oh yeah, worldvegansummit.com. Register now for the big event coming in July. We're talking today to Clifton Roberts. He is the presidential candidate for the Humane Party. He is a vegan. And I wanted to look at the platform of the Humane Party, Clifton, and start off with what the party's positions are regarding non-human animals, for example.
Absolutely. Well, it's a very straightforward position. I absolutely love this party, and not only is it a platform to live by, but I've said that it's a platform that we should teach other people, and I personally would die for the platform. You know, first and foremost, the platform calls to end the property status and abolish the property status of all animals. And of course, that's going to include, you know, making sure that we eliminate the torture and the mutilation and slaughter of all non-human animals. And, you know, I think the best way to do that is not necessarily only through the judiciary system, because, you know, courts interpret existing law. So the Humane Party is committed to drafting new legislation, proposing new constitutional amendments. Recently, the Humane Party actually crafted the Abolition Amendment, which calls for the abolition of the torture, mutilation, and slaughter of all non-human animals. When I was CEO, I signed and sponsored a proposed constitutional amendment called the Ape Amendment, which is the American Primate Emancipation Amendment. And, you know, this is the strategy for the Humane Party. And I think that it's going to be one of the more effective strategies out there in the animal rights activism world is, you know, to actually identify root cause and propose and introduce legislation and constitutional amendments to get this done. So,
well, I'm in a state of shock right now. I'm in a state of shock because here I'm hearing the platform of a political party includes abolishing the property status of animals. So this is in a sense granting legal personhood for sentient beings that we're discussing here, Clifton.
Absolutely. And you know, I've seen some commentary, and people are mistaking this for trying to eradicate our relationship with animals. And I've seen people say, well, I have a dog and I have a cat, and you're trying to say that, you know, I can't have a relationship. You're trying to take my dog and cat. No, we're trying to make sure that you continue to be the guardian for that dog and that cat and that bird, or if you happen to have any other type of pet, whether it's a lizard or, you know, but it, you don't own it. You know, mm-hmm. who gives us that right to say that because we are human beings, we own another sentient being? So that's not what we're saying. What we are saying is we need to recognize the fact that each of these beings are individuals. They are a he and they are a she, and they have brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers. So it's you know, in terms of the platform component, it's I'm so passionate about every single other components of our platform, but definitely I think in terms of what hits my heart, it's seeing the treatment of animals and how they're just discarded and killed and tortured and, you know, kidnapped and violated. You know, when you talk about rape, I mean, good grief. So yeah, I'm very passionate about that. Now, just to let you know, your listeners can go to humaneparty.org and kind of look at the specific details of each platform component. But overall, you know, if I had to break it down at a very high level, I'm running for office. I want to run because I want to finally balance our budget. I'm running to elevate the rights of all citizens, which is going to, including a revamp of our criminal justice system. And I'm running to protect all life, whether it's human or non-human. And I'm running to defend our environment, you know, including getting rid of GMOs and finding out, well, we already know what the root causes are to climate change and environmental destruction, which is...
Clifton, we need to take another break. We will continue our discussion with the presidential candidate of the Humane Party, Clifton Roberts, on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com.
Producing over 500 hours per week of talk radio, GCN Live is a world leader in talk radio. GCNLive.com.
Greetings and welcome to the second hour of Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. We are live Sundays, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Time, syndicated by the Genesis Communications Network. You can click listen live at goveganradio.com. You can go to gcnlive.com to check out the many talk shows there. And inexplicably, this program today would mark our 15th anniversary on the air. Today we are talking to Clifton Roberts, who is the presidential candidate for the Humane Party. If you've been listening thus far, you would have learned that Clifton is a vegan who wants to be president. And among the things that he wishes to accomplish, among his issues, would be to abolish the property status of animals, granting of legal personhood for all sentient beings. Now, if...
Oh, only if Clifton, only if you weren't the ethics and legal compliance manager for Intel, I could come up with a conspiracy with Diebold machines, and you have to know somebody who could figure out the codes to the election machines, and you know, anybody who wants to abolish the property status of animals, I could be willing to put a bunch of zeros and ones together in a conspiracy, but you didn't hear me say that because you are the ethics and legal compliance manager. So
that's right. That's right. Well, you know, and just to let you know, the Humane Party doesn't accept donations or money from corporations. You know, we're a completely grassroots based organization, and that's what I also loved about the Humane Party when I came across the platform.
Well, that's and great. Yeah.
You know, in accepting that nomination. You know, I held true to that. I want to make sure that I keep my promise to protect that platform. And you mm-hmm. know, we both know, Bob, that when it comes to animal rights, I mean, there's so many other benefits, you know, to protecting the rights of animals. And we know that, you know, it's going to reduce global warming, reduce that methane and nitrous oxide production. It's going to obviously save large amounts of money, water, because I live here in California, and water preservation is a huge issue here in California. And, you know, they're urging us to not water our grass or do it only on 2 days a week. But we all know that the water that it takes to keep animals healthy in factory farms far exceeds anything that we can do individually as citizens.
Oh yeah, I mean, animal agriculture is the, you know, it's the largest use of water and the largest source of pollution of water, and you know, we're sucking the aquifers dry here in California. The Central Valley is collapsing on itself because the water is being sucked out for animal agriculture. So and then it's also the health plan. I mean, I've had T. Colin Campbell on this program, and I believe the figure he said was that at least 90%, maybe he said 80%, let's say 80, at least 80% of all fatal degenerative disease is caused by animal protein and not much of it. So if there's a healthcare plan in America, it's, you know, go vegan, basically, isn't it?
Absolutely. I 100% agree with that. And, you know, when you tie that to balancing our federal budget, you know, 27 to 30% of our spending when it comes to our budget is around healthcare, because we're looking at a nation of citizens that are sick. You know, we have obesity rates and diabetes and cancer. And, you know, even the
and
definition
heart
of cancer,
disease, heart disease, yeah. which we're told is preventable. Nobody has to get heart disease. And yet children are showing signs of heart disease, you know, and high cholesterol at this point. So.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's
yeah, so
amazing.
You know, it's very much tied to some of the other platform components that you see on humanepartydot.org.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. I must say I torture myself by watching the debates of the main parties, and I, you know, it just seems like one of the greatest gatherings of misfits imaginable when I watched the Republicans. And so there was one debate where Hugh Hewitt was addressing Ben Carson. His quote is, "We're talking about ruthless things tonight, carpet bombing, toughness, war, and people wonder, could you do that?" He's talking to Ben Carson here. "Could you order airstrikes that would kill innocent children? Not scores, but hundreds and thousands. Could you wage war as a commander-in-chief?" You had asked Ben Carson. And he said yes, he could. Prior to that, Ted Cruz said he was all for carpet bombing. And Donald Trump said that targeting the family members of suspected terrorists would be a good strategy. So apparently, to be this commander-in-chief, the question is, could you wage war? And what's your answer to that? If Hugh Hewitt were asking you that, Clifton, what would your response be?
Well, you know, the preamble to the Constitution states that we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense. And war is a step that needs to be taken when we need to protect ourselves. So I think that in terms of our foreign policy and our national security, I think that when we really make efforts to organize real diplomatic partnerships to deal with the likes of ISIS, I think that that's going to be a lot more effective than carrying out airstrikes or deploying new troops, you know, abroad. You see a lot of consensus where there's agreement that the military solution and military might is not the answer. I think diplomacy must have center stage. This means, you know, when it comes to ISIS, this means serious engagement with Iran, among other players. And, you know, we know that Tehran has a lot of influence in Baghdad, much more than Washington does. So I think taking that diplomatic approach, I think, is going to be the best solution. And there's a video that I published a few months back on my stance on foreign policy. You know, we live in an environment where we should be taking advantage of technology, and we should be engaging with the people of other countries to really come up with effective solutions. So to answer your question, no, I would not just go and bomb people. You know, Humane Party drops solutions, not bombs. And so I think that...
Yeah, I noticed, and I think it's interesting that you, on the website or in your video, say that you want to go beyond the elite-to-elite diplomacy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, how wonderful would it be, Bob, to have a president that would have a world tour? You know, you see people go on tours in the world and globally all the time. And how wonderful would it be to have leaders that just go and visit these countries and call them up ahead of time and say, look, I want to come and talk to the people of the municipalities, the local townships, and I want to really figure out what's going on. I want to figure out a way that we can establish a technology infrastructure through social media or whatever the case is, through app development, and really figure out how we can collectively come up with solutions that are peaceful versus solutions that are aggressive. And one of the reasons we are so aggressive is because we do eat meat. My acronym for meat is muscle and epinephrine of animal tissue. You know, people that have eaten meat for years have eaten adrenaline, pure adrenaline, because we know that before an animal dies, before he's tortured and murdered, their muscles are pumped with adrenaline to help them, right? So, there's root cause there. But I would say first and foremost that military might is not always the best answer when it comes to protecting ourselves. Yes, but not to go because of policy to go and bomb other children, mothers and fathers of children that are going to grow up hating us.
As we would expect, a vegan candidate is in support of peace. I mean, the other vegan candidates in the past, Denis Kucinich ran for president and wanted there to be a Department of Peace, and Cindy Sheehan has run for office. She's vegan and peace mom, and I remember that Tolstoy said, as long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields, don't you think the problem, Clifton, is the influence of the war and weapon industry? I mean, there's money in drones, apparently. So it's hard not to bomb and use up the inventory, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, I actually have a proposition even there. I think that no corporation should be allowed to make a profit on war. That's my personal stance on that. And, you know, in our platform, it stands, you know, our platform stance is that we should not create profit motives to instigate war. So companies like Halliburton and Lockheed Martin, Boeing, that now make millions in profits from war, I think will be made to, you know, if I were president, I would make it to where they could provide the necessary equipment for war without charge to our government. And be nationalized for that duration of combat. So, and I think that there's certain techniques and tactics that can be applied to support that strategic initiative.
And we are talking to Clifton Roberts, presidential candidate for the Humane Party. Let's run down a few more platform issues, maybe death penalty. Where are we on the death penalty?
Well, if the government, if our government sets a standard that we are not going to kill our own citizens, I think that that's going to serve very, very positive benefits to the way that we treat ourselves as citizens. You know, we all know that we kill each other here in the United States, probably far more than any other country. And so definitely repeal of the death penalty, I think, is very important. I think that we should be dispensing justice and not death. And not only that, you know, research has showed us that when you sentence a citizen to death, that it is much more expensive to sentence someone to death than to sentence them to life in prison. You know, there was a Seattle University study examining the cost of the death penalty and found that each death penalty case costs an average of about $1 million more than
We have to take one more break. We'll have a few minutes more with Clifton Roberts of the Humane Party on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Disclaimer, I am not responsible for the content of network commercials and will continue to try to recover from some of them right now. We only have a few minutes left with Clifton Roberts, who is the presidential candidate for the Humane Party. So, Clifton, gosh, you know, a lot of people are excited about Bernie Sanders. It's feel the burn, although the burn they may feel is climate change from, you know, Bernie Sanders saying, hey, Ben and Jerry's in every home. So it's Bernie's not quite as advanced and progressive yet as where you are. But so what do you hope to accomplish with your presidential campaign for the Humane Party?
It is our hope to, first of all, insert ourselves into the national dialogue. You know, we've received some tremendous support from not only the vegan community, but from other people that call themselves animal rights activists, and for other parts of our party platform. And we've also, you know, seen some national exposure from other media outlets as well. So I think that, you know, we have social media accounts where I see personally someone that had not known that there's a political party that exists that speak their language. So for one, when we affect one person and inspire them and say, wow, I'm going to vote for you, they're actually voting for what they believe in. And I think that is what is saddening about the situation where they say, well, Bernie Sanders is the lesser of two evils. And I think what we wanted to accomplish here is to show that you can actually run. It's not just an ideology. It's something that it's practical, and we could take advantage of our political process to insert not only our voice, but the voiceless into this process that we can help protect them.
Well, that's really inspiring to see, you know, that you really went for, you know, a sensible, what seems like to a lot of people who look at your platform, this will make a whole lot of sense. And it's really amazing. How can people get in touch with you and get involved?
Well, to get involved, first of all, I urge people to visit humaneparty.org and, you know, volunteer, sign up. And we have a nice conference developer infrastructure where, you know, you can actually interact and help develop policy and process and procedure in your state and talk about ways to influence legislation. And then visit cliftonroberts.org as well. And I wanted to remind you and your listeners, Bob, that, you know, every single activist movement started with a thought, a small group of people that wanted to instigate change. From Susan B. Anthony to Harriet Tubman to Martin Luther King to John F. Kennedy. So, you know, don't let the odds that stand in front of us deter you or distract you or discourage you from getting involved in this wonderful platform.
Right. It's as you said, it's usually voting for the lesser of the evils, and I've spoken to other presidential candidates before, so I hope things went well in this. I've had practice. I've said hi to Ralph Nader at the South Central Farm, which we were trying to save in Southern California. I've had Dennis Kucinich on this program. And while I was waiting for my car in a garage in Washington, D.C., I met George McGovern, you know, and it was like, hey, I voted for you for president, you know, so he was all,
that's awesome.
All friendly and excited. Well, thanks.
I've enjoyed being on your show. I think you've asked some great questions, and I know that you affected someone listening to the show that probably didn't know about the Humane Party or this bit, so I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Clifton. We will stay in touch, and the website again is?
CliftonRoberts.org and HumaneParty.org.
Thanks for being with us. Continue on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com, on Twitter at Go Vegan Radio, Facebook Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and two Bob Linden pages there in the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Register now, worldvegansummit.com. Come on out to Berkeley, University of California, Berkeley, July 29th, 30th, and 31st. And Professor Gary Francione will be there with multiple presentations. And he's here, as he is every week at this time, or sometimes earlier, but always by now. Professor Francione, how are you?
Yes, I'm here, and Anna Charlton is also here. You've invisibilized her again. She's a very forgiving person. She lives with me. She has lots of practice. yes, we're fine, Bob, and hope that you're doing fine. We had a snowstorm here, which was actually somewhat scary. I have to tell you, we've got 30 inches of snow, and it's... It's a little disconcerting to look out there, and
it was record-setting, right? New York City had its highest one-day snowfall ever.
It's remarkable, and I'm hoping that the guy's going to come and plow out the driveway, or else I'm going to have a hard time getting to school in the morning. However.
School should be canceled. But by the way, again, this snowstorm, you know, climate change, animal agriculture, number one cause of climate change. So everybody eating meat, dairy, fish, and eggs,
you know, you're in the snow because of this, and this is also the reason I moved to California, as I recall. I lived through some of those snowstorms in New York, so,
well, yeah. Like I can tell you, Bob, this is a snowstorm. I grew up in upstate New York where it was fairly common to have blizzards in April, but this is really quite something. In any event, so we wanted to talk about an issue tonight. It sort of came off of the issue with the Vegan Society in Britain. A couple of weeks ago, I wrote an essay in response to some positions that were being taken by certain feminists and certain people of color who were basically arguing that that they rejected veganism as a moral baseline. And I looked at their arguments and I analyzed them and said that their arguments were problematic. And this resulted in my being called a racist and a sexist because I dared to say that people of color and women had a moral obligation to be vegan. But that's what a moral principle is, a universalizable principle. It applies to everybody. And so then I did a poster, which I posted on my Facebook page, basically saying that animals don't really care about the color or the race or the gender or the sex or whatever of the people who are exploiting them. They just don't want to be exploited. And we all have an obligation to go vegan. And this evoked some fairly strong reactions. People got very angry with me. I mean, I'm sort of used to this. They've been getting angry with me for 25 years now. But I thought this was particularly peculiar. And I'm waiting for Yasmin Dabou and Amanda Baker. Amanda Baker is the senior advocacy and policy officer of the Vegan Society, and she accused me of white privilege and race privilege in saying that veganism is a moral baseline. And I've asked them to come on to your show with your approval and discuss this with me, and I know you've extended that invitation. I've written twice to them and haven't heard back.
I haven't heard back yet either. But
I mean, all I can say is if somebody could figure out how to hook up poor Donald Watson to a power generator, they'd be able to power London. He'd be spinning so quickly in his grave. It is such a travesty that the society that bears the name of the man who coined the term veganism in 1944, who was a politically progressive guy and certainly saw veganism as a moral imperative, basically is now taking these sorts of positions. But it did raise an interesting question that some people wrote to us about and asked us, and we got involved in an interesting discussion, and that is, what do you do about a situation? We talk about the desert island and the desert island scenario, where it's clear that if we don't have if all we have is pleasure, amusement, or convenience as a justification for using animals, then we can't use them. I mean, that's very clear, because if animals matter, then at the very least we need a good reason. Then pleasure, amusement, or convenience can't constitute a good reason. But then the question becomes, well, what do you do in a situation of necessity? Is it all right to exploit animals in a situation of necessity? And that came up in the context of talking about food deserts. Food deserts, for people who have never heard that expression before, basically urban areas where fresh food is hard to get. And, you have a lot of poor people, a lot of people of color in these areas. It's appalling. Food deserts shouldn't exist anywhere, particularly, in this country where, you've got enormous wealth, the idea that we have people, living in poverty and in food deserts is really unconscionable. But the question becomes, is it okay to exploit animals if you live in a food desert? Because the argument is, that's like being on a desert island. And so this got us, we had a very interesting discussion with some folks, and we did a lot of talking amongst ourselves, and this is what I'd like people to think about. In the desert island situation, let's think about how we think about human beings in the desert island situation. You and I, Bob, are trapped on a desert island. And there are there's no plant protein, or there are no plants to eat, and there are no animals to eat. There's just you. And I kill you and I eat you. Is that morally justifiable in the sense of it being okay? And the answer is no, it's not. It may be morally excusable, that is, it's wrong, but we understand why I did it, but it's wrong. We're very clear on the moral imperative, the moral baseline, it's wrong. I argued, 15 years ago when I wrote Introduction to Animal Rights, if you're on a desert island, it may be excusable to kill and eat an animal if there's nothing else for you to eat and you're going to starve to death. It's not okay to do it, just as it's not okay to kill the human and eat the human.
But will you have an excuse if you killed me and ate me, you could still say you were eating vegan?
Well, that's true. There you go. There you go. I'm eating VV. I'm eating host of the only vegan radio show. It would be,
my value just went up on the meat market. This isn't. That, yeah.
But my eating you would not be morally okay. It would be morally wrong. But we would understand why I did it, and my punishment would be mitigated. Perhaps just as there have been cases where people have eaten other people. And, humans have eaten humans in situations of being stranded at sea. And, and nobody ever says, oh, that's okay that you did that. But oftentimes, not always, but oftentimes their punishment has been mitigated because it's excusable. Because we say, well, people don't really have a moral choice in situations of compulsion like that. But in a desert, in a food desert, when you're talking about a food desert, first of all, you don't have that level. And I want to say, I want to preface this by saying, I think food deserts are horrible. They represent horrible classism and racism, and they should be abolished. We need to, maybe Bernie Sanders is going to be elected, and maybe we can get Bernie Sanders to do something about these food deserts. We work in one. Newark is a food desert. So the question becomes, is it okay? In food deserts, you don't have the compulsion that you have on the desert island, because people living in food deserts have very little access to fresh food. But they can get rice and beans, for example, and, they'll pay more than they will pay if they had a car and they could get to the suburbs or to a supermarket someplace. They'll pay more in the small corner shop, but they'll be able to get rice and beans cheaper than they can get meat food and animal products. So it's not that in a food desert you can't get access may be difficult, but you can get vegan food. So you're not in a situation of the desert island where even if you were in the desert island, it would still not be morally justifiable. It might be morally excusable, but it wouldn't be morally justifiable. But it's not, you don't have that situation. And also, we've had a lot of experience in dealing with people in food deserts because we have been working in Newark for a long time. And, Anna, talk a little bit about some of the stuff.
It's very useful for people who are advocating for veganism just to have got their act together and thought a little bit about how to help people make a transition in more difficult circumstances. So people won't have access to the sort of meat substitutes that some people turn to when they've given up meat. But with a bit of assistance and pointed in the right direction, for making wholesome and nutritious meals out of things that are available, it might be certainly a change of what's been put on their plate. But certainly things are available. And also, as food delivery changes, there are now opportunities to get food at things like Walmart, and one can use one's food stamp cards there. That's also a barrier, of course, because not every place takes services of food stamps.
We had a supermarket in Newark that closed because they wouldn't take food stamps.
It opened with great fanfare of serving the Newark community and closed soon afterwards because no one had addressed the food stamp issue and they couldn't get it approved quickly enough. So it's more difficult, but it can be done. I'm not suggesting that everyone who's in financial difficulty or other sort of social distress is going to be getting their food from Amazon, but although you can get bulk food from Amazon if people put their heads together and work together and perhaps buy together, And there are now some food delivery services that will accept food stamp cards if you present it when the food is delivered to you. So, again, it's not easy, and it may take a bus to get to a place that can provide the food that you need. But I hope that people who are working, particularly in the more urban areas, will do a little bit of thinking about what's available in their local communities.
Okay.
The new vegan.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of inquiries over the years.
Okay, it's time for a break. I don't know if you hear the music, but the music says it's time for a break. We'll continue our discussion with Professors Gary Francione and Anna Charlton on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, goveganradio.com. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com. Register now for the World Vegan Summit and Expo at worldvegansummit.com. And you may want to spend a few extra days in the Bay Area and do a vegan restaurant tour. We have so many great vegan restaurants here. One of the best being Vegetarian House. 100% vegan restaurant, 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose. Check out the menu at vegetarianhouse.us. Vegetarian House also caters, so if you have an event coming up, a business event, a social event, you're getting married, and you actually want it to be a great event and for the food to be great, get in touch with Vegetarian House, vegetarianhouse.us. Check out that menu. You'll see vegan sacrifice. We don't sacrifice anything. We're foodies. We love food, and we have the best food. And we're talking to Professor Gary Francione and also talking to Professor Anna Charlton. And I guess some people don't have that luxury. We were talking about food deserts. Some months back, I had a Dr. Baruch Ben Yehuda on the show. He's in the Washington, D.C., Maryland area. He takes a food truck, a vegan food truck, out to the food deserts, you know, which, you know, if we want to do good activist work, maybe we can follow the example.
Well, in quite a few cities, there are efforts, as you probably know, to turn unused lots into urban gardens. Obviously, that's not going to help you in a snowstorm in February, but it does help you during the summer. So we should look into that and support people who are doing that. That's a good source of food and of education about food issues.
I mean, look, poverty is the problem, and yep. Classism is the problem, and there are poor people all over the place of all different colors who are, you know, who are in the category of being socioeconomically deprived.
So that basically means there's a liquor store nearby, right? I mean,
if we drive to the law school in Newark, we can get any amount of liquor, we can charge a cell phone, we can get that sort of thing, but to get fresh food and vegetables is very hard. But we should also be angry, as many people are, that large numbers of people in these communities are relegated to being offered fast food.
Well, that's how we legally kill poor people and people of color. We have them drink a lot, smoke cigarettes, and use narcotics because they're desperate and because they have hopeless lives, and we put, you know, fast food places on every corner, so that's the junk that they eat. And then, you know, and then we sit around and lament about, you know, how they, you know, how the lifespan of a black man in Harlem is lower than that of somebody in Bangladesh. And so, you know, it's horrible. Poverty's horrible. Classism's horrible. Our economic system stinks in many different ways. But the reality is, you know, the point, though, I want to drive home is that even when things are difficult, that doesn't mean that actions become moral because of difficulty. I mean, if I'm a poor person, it doesn't mean it's morally right for me to steal my neighbor's, whatever my neighbor's got, or to commit a crime and harm my neighbor, it doesn't make it morally right. We might understand, you know, we might understand why people behave in that situation in those ways, but that doesn't make it morally right. And I really think we've got this idea that, you know, that some of these folks are pushing, that if people find it difficult to be vegan, then they don't have an obligation to be vegan, is a principle that has no limitations. Everybody will find it. Anybody can claim that it's difficult to be vegan, and then once they've sort of entered the, you know, the safe harbor of difficulty, there are no obligations anymore. And so, you know, I think it's really important to sort of recognize, you know, just as we all of us, recognize that certain things with respect to human beings are morally wrong. It's wrong to kill people. It's wrong to rape people. It's wrong to harm children. You know, and these are not relativistic moral obligations. They're absolute universalizable moral obligations.
We're out of time. We'll have to continue the discussion next week. Thanks for listening to Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden at goveganradio.com.